the end of Emor discusses the Nogeshe, the blasphemy. And it introduces a section, a very interesting phrase. Let's start backwards. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about Kohanim and Yisrael in the beginning. So the phrase is, Vayetze ben Isha Yisraelis, v'hu ben Ish Mitzri b'soch b'nei Yisrael. He comes from a mixed marriage. His father is an Egyptian. His mother is a Jewess. And he walks around in the machane. Ve'inatzuba machane. A lot of words here, a lot of confused pedigree. Who's his father? Who's his mother? Ben Isha Yisraelis, Shemimo. But why does the Torah introduce it with Vayetze? Where was he that he walks out? The word machne is really important, but Vayava b'machne, Vayelech b'machne, why Vayetze? So Rashi has three pshats. I've talked about the other two in previous years, which all are interesting. But I want to talk about the first one, which is more subtle, but really important as well. Second pshat is that his disappointment and discontent had something to do with the previous section. So his entire blasphemy was a product of, it was an outcome of the previous narrative. The previous text was about the Shulchan. The halach of the Shulchan is that the bread is replaced only once a week on Shabbos. The miracle of the Beis HaMikdash allowed the bread to stay fresh all week. But he was disturbed. He was discontent. This is the bread of a king. It should be refreshed daily. It's an interesting question about how you see religion, weekly, daily. It was a theological, ideological confusion that causes blasphemy. The last pshat is also important, which is the more literal pshat, that his mother was from Dan, so he wanted to live with Dan, because he was a Jew, but the machanos were arranged based on father, based on paternal, so the people of Dan didn't really want it, which talks a lot about inclusion, we'll see later. A lot of people leave religion today because they don't feel included in the community. This is a little code about how to create, as best we can, inclusion. It's difficult. Body language is important. But the first pshat is much more subtle. Mhechan yatsa. Rabbi Levi Amar Me'olamo Yatza. Basically, he forfeited his Olam Haba. Me'olamo Yatza. Now, this may sound like a very harsh sentence, but in reality, it's an important promise. That this is the way you walk out on Judaism, and you walk on your Olam Haba. The other sins, as terrible as they are, whether they're the Egel, whether they are the Meraglim, Kol Yisrael Yeshem Chelik Olam Haba. The Gemara in Sanhedrin considers even the Dor HaMidbar losing their Chelik Olam Haba because it's just repeated criminals. And then the Gemara says they don't because of their Emuna. Okay, that's superb Emuna, superior Emuna, Zecharti Lechas and Nirayach. But it's almost an important statement that, okay, someone that gets up and Chas V'Shalom assaults HaKadosh Baruch Hu, publicly denies HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But until that point, you're not saying Me'olamo. And sin doesn't mean you're no longer part of a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It doesn't mean that. It just means you're a sinner. And sinners have relationships with Hashem. Even the Mekoshesh Eitzim, which we'll talk about in a few moments, because here is Chilul Shabbos, we say the Chilul Shabbos is like Avodah Zarah, and Avodah Zarah is normally like this. So we think about all the Jews today, how many of them believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or how many Jews that aren't classically, halachically obedient still believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu at some level? That's not called walking out in Judaism. When you think about walking out in Judaism, it's someone that blasphemes, someone that denies God's existence, Spinoza, someone that rebels against God. I feel in my own personal sense that someone who intermarries has made such a frontal decision not to continue the Jewish race. It's always walking on the Jewish people, not on God, because you still can believe in God. But I think sometimes today we look at people who are just sinners and people judge them hard. Not they judge them harshly, but they disqualify them from religion or disqualify them from Jewish membership, and those are two different things. So this is an important collective. Okay, so now he sins, and he's placed in jail. Vayanichu b'mishmar lefrosh lema pi Hashem. So Rashi has a sense, Vayanichu hu. They placed him. It doesn't mean Vayanichu hu. So I don't know what the grammar would have been differently, why this is seen as extra or extraneous. But Rashi is an interesting shot. They had a separate jail cell for him. Who was in the next door jail cell? You know, they were knocking at each other at night, sending each other their food. Who was in a separate jail cell? Well, who's the other person to be jailed in Tanakh? Moshe. And according to Rashi, these two events happen more or less simultaneously, even though they're separated by an entire sefer. For whatever reason, the story of the Makoshesh is reinserted at the Shlach for obvious reasons, denying Eretz Yisrael, denying Shabbos, the Dor Midbar, the sentence of the Dor Midbar. Rashi says, Levado, they placed the Menokev Shem by himself, but they didn't put him in the same jail cell as the Makoshesh. And they knew that the Makoshesh, ironically, had Misa, because they knew the halachas of Shabbos, they just didn't know the halachas of blasphemy. So they didn't want to put them together. Now, why did they want to put them together? It's a really fascinating. I can imagine, let's say, Moshe, you get caught for speeding. And they, you know, you're in the state, I don't know, of Georgia. And in Georgia, the rules are you have to go to prison. You catch speeding, they throw you into a cell with a couple rapists and murderers. Poor little Moshe sitting there. In a St. Hill in the corner. These big burly guys. So you have to have a separate jail cell. Or today they have white collar jail cells for people that are caught on white, because they don't mix with the same population of policemen. The policeman is apprehended at the center while somewhere, because if he's with the common inmates, you know, he won't make it. But what the Makoshesh was a rapist, so that's what the Makoshesh was. He was Slavcha, when Chazal. And I said, have a Chavarissa, let it be like, let him have a Kolo there. What's so difficult in placing the two? So part of it may just be embarrassment. That the Makoshesh already had a clear death sentence above his head. And they didn't want the Nokev Shein to feel embarrassed, which reminds us that as much as a person's a sinner and deserves Mises based in, and which in the end he does, and it's heading that way. And we have to treat everyone with dignity and with respect, and famous Chazal, but Pasuk of Yavdu L'Recha Kamocha, if you look in the Gemara, we think Yavdu L'Recha Kamocha is a Kal Gadol B'Torah. Not only do we think of it, Kiva, like Momer, the legend, thinks of it as a Kal Gadol B'Torah, but the halachic applications are only two. One is the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that when you kill someone, the death sentence should be easy-ish. And two is when you marry someone, you should love her. That's the Gemara in Kiddush. And after the Chakamacha is applied to the two extremes, to a case where you wouldn't think it applies to a criminal, and to a person you wouldn't think it's necessary to your wife. And the answer is yes, it's necessary in every relationship, even in a one in which you hope that romance will ultimately dominate and drive the relationship, because romance isn't everlasting, and on the other hand, people are criminals. I think it's also, they don't want to be self-fulfilling. I mean, this person may still be redeemable. So if you put him on death row, and you put him into that section, and then all of a sudden he sees himself a certain way. It's not just that he'll be embarrassed by others, or, oh, I'm part of the death group. And they're not sure if he's redeemable. It's an interesting story. Why would it be obvious to them? And you have to go dig a little deeper, drill to the core of why he blasphemed. But what's ironic about it, I'm not sure what to make of this irony, but it's really ironic that, at least according to Chazal, and the simple reading of the Pesukim, that this whole blasphemy was a product of him not being allocated proper space in the Machna. He just didn't have a place to be. No one gave him space. He was on the fringes. And now in the jail cell, we're going out of our way to create space for him. We're going out of our way to give him a place to be that's his. Which means that it casts the previous treatment in a certain light, that suddenly there's certain people. I don't think this is Chazal feel that Am Yisrael is purely innocent on this one. There was a person, it was people from Dan were very violent with him and very abusive verbally, very aggressive, and there's a certain hidden critique that could have been a little bit softer even if he didn't have the halachic, which is really the big secret of inclusion today. The big secret of inclusion, or I'll make it into a briska chakira. Inclusion at Svedinim, the decision in the body language. And the decision can't always be inclusive, but the body language has to be inclusive. So you can decide a certain member can't continue to be a member of your community, but the way you speak to them and the way you speak to the community ends up being very, and in general inclusive, not just within the Jewish community, within humanity, universality. It's just sometimes we go wrong in the body language. Sometimes you just have a situation where you can't help someone out, but it should be with pain and sadness rather than anger and disqualification. And that's really what I think we're missing today. And I hear a lot in rabbis and rabbinates sometimes. And just, okay, it's a pain and sadness that we can't find a solution for this group of people, for that group of people in Israel, rather than their goyim and their animals and they're not Jews. And it's the tonality's off. So it's interesting that they're being so sensitive to him in jail. And it casts the previous treatment in certain ways more favorably, in certain ways less favorably, in certain ways more favorably. This was not a statement about him, and they're willing to create space for him, which just can't be part of Machadon. Then some people who were more aggressive with him that cast in a disfavorable light. Anyway, so the section ends with Ani Hashem, and we've seen the words Ani Hashem throughout the entire Achrei Imos Kedoshim, and Rashi always labors to describe why it concludes with Ani Hashem, when it's obviously latent and implicit in the Torah. But here there's a phrase, Ani Hashem Elokechem. That sounds very Shema-like, Ani Hashem Elokechem. Why is that extra word Elokechem inserted here? So Rashi says, Elokei Kulchem. Here the word Elokechem is a conjugation, Elokei Kulchem. Well, you know what the message of Rashi is. Kishem Shani Miachet Shmei Alechem, Kach Ni Miachet Shmei Alegeri. This person was a ger. I mean, he had two disqualifications, one is shidduch, resume. One is he was a ger, and one is he came from a mixed marriage. So it was pretty hard for him to get a shidduch, pretty hard for him to get a place to rent. But seriously, Rashi is speaking about ger in particular, but the overall message, the overall tone is, again, you had to create exclusion. This person didn't have a natural place in the machne. Perhaps you could have found a solution putting him outside the machne. Sadly, there was no solution that was successfully mediated, but and because he blasphemed, now he has to have the ultimate exclusion. He has to be put to death, and what happens in the next world, only HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows. So we have to create an integrity. You have to protect the integrity of the community, which is really what the end of the section is about. Why is this in Vayikra? This is the only two narrative sections in Vayikra. Vayikra is all halacha. It's a fascinating concept. The entire Vayikra is halachas. It's packed, polysaturated with halacha. There are only two stories. The story of Nadav and Avihu and Shemini, and the story of the Noki of Shem and Nehemar. Those are the only two stories. And essentially, there's a commonality between them, but a difference. Commonality is they both violate the presence of Hashem, desecrate the presence of Hashem. The Nadav and Avihu are desecrating the presence of Hashem in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Mishkan. Here, they're desecrating the presence of Hashem in the Machna, because the whole end of Sefer Vayikra reminds us that Hashem's presence radiates from the Mishkan outwards. And that radiance, the transition happens in Tazria Mitzara by Acharei Imos Kedoshim, Emor Bahar. We're already discussing Machne issues, not solely Mishkan issues. In the end of Bahar, it's clearly the Machne, the larger Machne of Eretz Yisrael, Shemitah, and Dinim of Eretz Yisrael. So here there has to be an exclusion to protect the integrity of the Machne. And that's why everyone that heard it has to come and be and it's. I don't want to spend too much time on one more Rashi. In fact, there's actually a smicha that takes place here. It's a very carbon-like smicha. Rashi doesn't associate it with the carbon, so this is a Rashi shir, but if this were a Tanakh shir, not a Rashi shir, it's fascinating. There's a smicha here. It looks very carbon-like. But Hashem's reminding that when you exclude, it has to be practical, logistical, not tribal. Oh, Hashem cares about us, doesn't care about everyone else. Hashem cares about this person as much as he cares about you. This person has a tzelem elokim. Hashem is Abba for that person. Sadly, practically, we can't create that inclusion that we'd like. But Hashem reminds us, Hashem, I mean, this is just a no-brainer. This is a pretty obvious Rashi. One more very, very quick Rashi. Now that it's late, and breakfast is being served, but it's an important Rashi. There are three halachos that are stated about a kohen that are also stated about Yisrael, but they're stated about a kohen in greater detail. That when a kohen suffers a loss of life, he can't pull his hair out, he can't cut his skin, he can't cut off certain parts of his beard. Now these halachas also are stated by Am Yisrael and Devarim Yudalit and Parshas Rei. So, and Rashi, there are three Rashi that say that we need it stated by both, because by Am Yisrael the information is less comprehensive. For example, is it only your hair and your head or any place you can't pull out? Since it says here any place, whereas in Devarim Rei it says Benenechem, so this expands. You should know in Devarim Yudalit, Am Yisrael, you can't pull out any of your hair, not just your hair between your eyes. Look at Emma. Or when the Torah says you can't cut your body, you think, oh, you're the chayiv for the overall cutting experience. That's what you think in Parshas Rei. So look in Parshas Emor, look at the Kohanim. Basically, the Jews are looking to the Kohanim, the non-Kohanim are looking to the Kohanim to provide halachic information that we don't have about Jews. So that means that the message is that we're telling Am Yisrael, you're really Kohanim, and you're quasi-Kohanim, you're pseudo-Kohanim. You're not Kohanim to get an Aliyah, you're not Kohanim to get Truma. But this is, of course, the famous Pasuk in Parshas Yisrael, that Am Yisrael are Kohanim for the world. And Rav Aaron would always quote famous Rambam, that we're not just Kohanim for the world. Very, very interesting. But the Rambam says in Shemitah V'Yovel that we should also aspire to live the life of a Kohen, not just in our mission of Mamlechas Kohanim V'Goy Kadosh to show the world what religion is, but even in our own lifestyle, a Kohen's lifestyle, more religious, more theological, less materialistic, less focused on this world. Even if you live on an island, and you're never going to succeed in being an Orla Goyim in the sense that Amlechas Kohen and Kaddish, you can still aspire not to be a genetic Kohen, but you can still aspire to live the life of a Kohen. And that's something which is And there's a bridge between Emor and Parshas Re'eh. And the question is, and I don't want to take any more time, but I'll just leave you the question, why is the Torah's way of bridging between Kohanim and Yisraelim, reminding Yisraelim that they're quasi-Kohanim, why does the bridge the Torah choose, how we deal with grief? It's a very provocative question. The Torah could have chosen many halachas that overlap between a Jew and a Kohen, and provide certain information, like Gevurah, for example. The three halachas that the Torah chooses to create a bridge all have to do with how we deal with grief, pulling our hair out, cutting our arms, pulling off our beard when people die. And here the message is, well, Yisrael looked at the Kohen, not just in general for halachic information, but for more moderate, temperate ways to deal with grief. That's a really interesting question, but we'll end there. Okay.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Good morning, good morning, good shabbat.